Chapter 7. Were now, but for men's memories, buried under the brief inscription on a tomb, or an entry of dates in a dry pedigree. Another member, an old surgeon, a somewhat grim though sociable personage, was quite of the speaker's opinion, and felt quite sure that the memory of the reverend gentleman must abound with such curious tales of fair dames, of their loves and hates, their joys and their misfortunes, their beauty and their fate. The parson, a trifle confused, retorted that their friend the surgeon, the son of a surgeon, seemed to him, as a man who had seen much, and heard more during the long course of his own, and his father's practice, the member of all others most likely to be acquainted with such lore. The bookworm, the colonel, the historian, the vice president, the churchwarden, the two curates, the gentleman tradesman, the sentimental member, the crimson maltster, the quiet gentleman, the man of family, the spark, and several others, quite agreed, and begged that he would recall something of the kind. The old surgeon said that, though a meeting of the Mid-Wessex Field and Antiquarian Club was the last place at which he should have expected to be called upon in this way, he had no objection, and the parson said he would come next. The surgeon then reflected, and decided to relate the history of a lady named Barbara, who lived towards the end of the last century, apologizing for his tale as being perhaps a little too professional. The crimson maltster winked to the spark at hearing the nature of the apology, and the surgeon began. Dame the second. Barbara of the House of Creeb by the old surgeon. It was apparently an idea, rather than a passion, that inspired Lord Uplandtower's resolve to win her. Nobody ever knew when he formed it, or whence he got his assurance of success in the face of her manifest dislike of him. Possibly not until after that first important act of her life which I shall presently mention. His matured and cynical doggedness at the age of 19, when impulse mostly rules calculation, was remarkable, and might have owed its existence as much to his succession to the earldom, and its accompanying local honors in childhood, as to the family character. An elevation which jerked him into maturity, so to speak, without his having known adolescence. He had only reached his 12th year when his father, the 4th Earl, died, after a course of the bathwaters. Nevertheless, the family character had a great deal to do with it. Determination was hereditary in the bearers of that escutcheon, sometimes for good, sometimes for evil. The seats of the two families were about 10 miles apart, the way between them lying along the now old, then new, turnpike road connecting Havenpool and Warburn with the city of Melchester. A road which, though only a branch from what was known as the Great Western Highway, is probably, even at present, as it has been for the last 100 years, one of the finest examples of a macadamized turnpike track that can be found in England. The mansion of the Earl, as well as that of his neighbor, Barbara's father, stood back about a mile from the highway, with which each was connected by an ordinary drive and lodge. It was along this particular highway that the young Earl drove on a certain evening at Christmastide some 20 years before the end of the last century, to attend a ball at Sheen Manor, the home of Barbara, and her parents Sir John and Lady Grebe. Sir John's was a baronetcy created a few years before the breaking out of the Civil War, and his lands were even more extensive than those of Lord Uplandtower himself, comprising this manor of Sheen, another on the coast near, half the hundred of Cockton, and well-enclosed lands in several other parishes, notably Warburn and those contiguous. At this time Barbara was barely 17, and the ball is the first occasion on which we have any tradition of Lord Uplandtower's attempting tender relations with her. It was early enough, God knows. An intimate friend, one of the Drenkards, is said to have dined with him that day, and Lord Uplandtower had, for a wonder, communicated to his guest the secret design of his heart. You'll never get her, sure, you'll never get her. This friend had said at parting. She's not drawn to your lordship by love. And as for thought of a good match, why, there's no more calculation in her than in a bird. Apostrophe apostrophe, we'll see, apostrophe said Lord Upland Towers impassively. He no doubt thought of his friend's forecast as he traveled along the highway in his chariot, but the sculptural repose of his profile against the vanishing daylight on his right hand would have shown his friend that the Earl's equanimity was undisturbed. He reached the solitary wayside tavern called Lornton Inn, the rendezvous of many a daring poacher for operations in the adjoining forest, and he might have observed, if he had taken the trouble, a strange postchaise standing in the halting space before the inn. He duly sped past it, and half an hour after through the little town of Warburn. Onward, a mile farther, was the house of his entertainer. At this date it was an imposing edifice, or, rather, congeries of edifices as extensive as the residence of the Earl himself, though far less regular. One wing showed extreme antiquity, having huge chimneys, whose substructures projected from the external walls like towers, and a kitchen of vast dimensions, in which, it was said, breakfasts had been cooked for John of Gaunt. Whilst he was yet in the forecourt he could hear the rhythm of French horns and clarionets, the favorite instruments of those days at such entertainments. Entering the long parlor, in which the dance had just been opened by Lady Grebe with a minuet, it being now 7 o'clock, according to the tradition he was received with a welcome befitting his rank, and looked round for Barbara. She was not dancing, and seemed to be preoccupied almost, indeed, as though as he had been waiting for him. Barbara at this time was a good and pretty girl, who never spoke ill of anyone, and hated other pretty women the very least possible. She did not refuse him for the country dance which followed, and soon after was his partner in a second. The evening wore on, and the horns and clarionets tootled merrily. Barbara evinced towards her lover neither distinct preference nor aversion, but old eyes would have seen that she pondered something. However, after supper she pleaded a headache, and disappeared. To pass the time of her absence, Lord Upland Towers went into a little room adjoining the long gallery, where some elderly ones were sitting by the fire, for he had a phlegmatic dislike of dancing for its own sake, and, lifting the window curtains, he looked out of the window into the park and wood, dark now as a cavern. Some of the guests appeared to be leaving, even so soon as this, two lights showing themselves as turning away from the door and sinking to nothing in the distance. His hostess put her head into the room, to look for partners for the ladies, and Lord Upland Towers came out. Lady Grebe informed him that Barbara had not returned to the ballroom. As he had gone to bed in sheer necessity. As he has been so excited over the ball all day, apostrophe her mother continued, that I feared she would be worn out early. But sure, Lord Upland Towers, you won't be leaving yet? Apostrophe, he said, that it was near 12 o'clock, and that some had already left. I protest nobody has gone yet, apostrophe said Lady Grebe. To humor her, he stayed till midnight, and then set out. He had made no progress in his suit, but he had assured himself that Barbara gave no other guest the preference, and nearly everybody in the neighborhood was there. "'Tis only a matter of time," apostrophe said the calm young philosopher. The next morning he lay till near 10 o'clock, and he had only just come out upon the head of the staircase, when he heard hoofs upon the gravel without. In a few moments the door had been opened, and Sir John Grebe met him in the hall, as he set foot on the lowest stair. "'My lord, where's Barbara, my daughter?' Apostrophe, even the Earl of Upland Towers could not repress amazement. "'What's the matter, my dear Sir John?' apostrophe says he. The news was startling, indeed. From the baronet's disjointed explanation Lord Upland Towers gathered that after his own and the other guest's departure Sir John and Lady Grebe had gone to rest without seeing any more of Barbara, it being understood by them that as he had retired to bed when she sent word to say that she could not join the dancers again. Before then as he had told her maid that she would dispense with her services for this night, and there was evidence to show that the young lady had never lain down at all, the bed remaining unpressed. Circumstances seemed to prove that the deceitful girl had feigned a disposition to get an excuse for leaving the ballroom, and that as he had left the house within 10 minutes, presumably during the first dance after supper. I saw her go, apostrophe said Lord Uplandtowers. The devil you did. Apostrophe apostrophe said Sir John. Yes. Apostrophe apostrophe and he mentioned the retreating carriage lights, and how he was assured by Lady Grebe that no guest had departed. Surely that was it. Apostrophe apostrophe said the father. But she's not gone alone, do you know? Apostrophe apostrophe, ah, who is the young man? Apostrophe apostrophe, I can only guess. My worst fear is my most likely guess. I'll say no more. I thought yet I would not believe it possible that you was the sinner. Would that you had been. But tis t'other, by G. I must stand up, and after him. Apostrophe, whom do you suspect? Apostrophe apostrophe, Sir John would not give a name, and, stultified rather than agitated, Lord Uplandtowers accompanied him back to Sheen. He again asked upon whom were the baronet's suspicions directed, and the impulsive Sir John was no match for the insistence of Uplandtowers. He said at length, I fear 'tis Edmund Willows. Apostrophe apostrophe, who's he? Apostrophe apostrophe, a young fellow of Shottsford Forum, a widow woman's son, apostrophe the other told him, and explained that Willow's father, her grandfather, was the last of the old glass painters in that place, where, as you may know, the art lingered on when it had died out in every other part of England. By gee, that's bad, mighty bad. Apostrophe apostrophe said Lord Uplandtowers, throwing himself back in the chaise in frigid despair. They dispatched emissaries in all directions, one by the Melchester Road, another by Shottsford Forum, another coastwards. But the lovers had a 10-hour start, and it was apparent that sound judgment had been exercised in choosing as their time of flight the particular night when the movements of a strange carriage would not be noticed, either in the park or on the neighboring highway, owing to the general press of vehicles. The chaise which had been seen waiting at Lornton Inn was, no doubt, the one they had escaped in, and the pair of heads which had planned so cleverly thus far had probably contrived marriage ere now. The fears of her parents were realized. A letter sent by special messenger from Barbara, on the evening of that day, briefly informed them that her lover and herself were on the way to London, and before this communication reached her home they would be united as husband and wife. As he had taken this extreme step, because she loved her dear Edmund as she could love no other man, and because as he had seen closing round her the doom of marriage with Lord Uplandtowers, unless she put that threatened fate out of possibility by doing as he had done. As he had well considered the step beforehand, and was prepared to live like any other country townsman's wife, if her father repudiated her for her action. Dear. Apostrophe apostrophe said Lord Uplandtowers, as he drove homeward that night. Dear for a fool. Apostrophe apostrophe which shows the kind of love he bore her. Well, Sir John had already started in pursuit of them as a matter of duty, driving like a wild man to Melchester, and thence by the direct highway to the capital. But he soon saw that he was acting to no purpose. And by, discovering that the marriage had actually taken place, he forbore all attempts to unearth them in the city, and returned and sat down with his lady to digest the event as best they could. To proceed against this Willows for the abduction of our heiress was, possibly, in their power, yet, when they considered the now unalterable facts, they refrained from violent retribution. Some 6 weeks passed, during which time Barbara's parents, though they keenly felt her loss, held no communication with the truant, either for reproach or condemnation. They continued to think of the disgrace as he had brought upon herself, for, though the young man was an honest fellow, and the son of an honest father, the latter had died so early, and his widow had had such struggles to maintain herself, that the son was very imperfectly educated. Moreover, his blood was, as far as they knew, of no distinction whatever, whilst hers, through her mother, was compounded of the best juices of ancient baronial distillation, containing tinctures of Montville, and Mohun, and Siward, and Peveril, and Culliford, and Talbot, and Plantagenet, and York, and Lancaster, and God knows what besides, which it was a thousand pities to throw away. The father and mother sat by the fireplace, that was spanned by the four-centered arch bearing the family shields on its haunches, and groaned aloud the lady more than Sir John. To think this should have come upon us in our old age. ... said he. Speak for yourself. ... she snapped through her sobs. I am only 41. Why didn't he ride faster and overtake him? ... In the meantime the young married lovers, caring no more about their blood than about ditch water, were intensely happy, that is, in the descending scale which, as we all know, heaven in its wisdom has ordained for such rash cases, that is to say, the first week they were in the seventh heaven, the second in the sixth, the third week temperate, the fourth reflective, and so on. A lover's heart after possession being comparable to the earth in its geologic stages, as described to us sometimes by our worthy president. First a hot coal, then a warm one, then a cooling cinder, then chilly. The simile shall be pursued no further. The long and the short of it was that one day a letter, sealed with their daughter's own little seal, came into Sir John and Lady Greep's hands. And, on opening it, they found it to contain an appeal from the young couple to Sir John, to forgive them for what they had done, and they would fall on their naked knees, and be most dutiful children forevermore. Then Sir John and his lady sat down again by the fireplace with the four-centered arch, and consulted, and reread the letter. Sir John Grebe, if the truth must be told, loved his daughter's happiness far more, poor man, than he loved his name and lineage. He recalled to his mind all her little ways, gave vent to a sigh, and, by this time acclimatized to the idea of the marriage, said that what was done, could not be undone, and that he supposed they must not be too harsh with her. Perhaps Barbara and her husband were in actual need, and how could they let their only child starve? Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.